Hello, welcome to Spotlight, a beam of beauty full of island artistic energy.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we hear how the Isle of Man Choral Society is gearing up to start rehearsals for next year's concert at the Villa Marina and are hoping you might like to join them. We hear about this year's Isle of Man Arts Council lecture featuring another household name, this time from the world of music. A new book for Manx fiddle players and teaching dance at KA. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in, planning, hoping to create, or would really like to put in the spotlight. That's us. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, drag, film, all the others. You know the list. Get in contact. Email spotlight@manxradio.com or howardcain@manxradio.com. Love to hear from you. Let's get in contact. Get you featured on the programme. That's what it's all about. Carl Jenkins, the Isle of Man, a wonderful piece, and one of the pieces which is due to be performed by the Isle of Man Choral Society at their traditional large-scale gala concert with the Isle of Man Symphony Orchestra at the Villa Marina. It may be some way off, looking towards spring 26, but rehearsals will get underway shortly, and it's hoped that more people might come along to join the Choral Society before rehearsals get underway in earnest. Well, to find out more, I spoke to musical director of the Choral Society, Mandy Griffin.
Sunday, March 29th, and it's taking place as usual at the Villa Marina at 3 p.m. And we are starting rehearsals for that on September the 11th. So we start a good, 6 months in advance. All the preparations are in place and we're quite excited and ready to go with our programme for our 2026 concert.
Brilliant. So let's look at the programme though. So one piece I'm familiar with, the other I'm not. So Carl Jenkins, The Armed Man, wonderful piece.
It's a great piece. It's been 12 years, it will have been 12 years since the Isle of Man Choral Society last performed it. And we thought it was time. It's a popular piece. Audiences really enjoy it. Choir members really enjoy it. So we're looking forward to doing that again. It's very atmospheric, really quite moving. I've been fortunate enough the last two times the Choral Society have done it, I've been fortunate enough to be the soloist in it. And I've really struggled to get through it because I find it so emotional. Even though I've practiced it and rehearsed it and I thought I've got over, you can see audience members reacting to it and you can see people crying in the audience or getting really choked up, and it's hard not to respond to that when you're in it. So it is a work which really moves people and really does affect people, which is a nice thing to do. I think that's one of the jobs of music, is to move people, and I think The Armed Man really does do that.
Is it a popular piece with the choralists normally?
It is. It's funny. It's a little bit Marmite. People tend to either absolutely love it. So some of our members are so excited that we're doing it. And some people are coming in new to sing it because they've seen it performed or they've heard it. It's on Classic FM quite a lot, extracts from it. So it is drawing people in. It is popular in that respect. But other people really don't like it at all. I suppose we're all very different.
It's all subjective, I suppose, to a
degree. It's all subjective. Isn't it? And I think in a way, I was thinking about this morning. I was listening to it this morning, and I'm on the side that I find it very moving and very affecting in many ways. And I was kind of thinking, well, I don't know what people don't like about it. But we are all different and we all like different things. And I suppose perhaps also that speaks to its credit. If it moves people enough that they don't want to come and see it or they don't want to sing. Not that that's what we're about, but I think it is a work that is a little bit divisive in that way, and possibly because of the subject matter. It's quite raw in places. It's a mass of a piece. It's Carl Jenkins' The Armed Man, A Mass for Peace. But it's quite... it doesn't hold back from some of the horrors of war. Mm. And I think that that can be... So I think possibly it can be a little bit upsetting for people to sing and take part in. So perhaps that's a reason why some people aren't so keen on it.
And Jenkins himself, he started off in the rock world and then he became a serious musical or serious classical composer.
He did. And I think there's a lot of that in his choral works that he's done. I think you can see he's come perhaps from that tradition rather than maybe coming up studying sort of the work of Bach and Mozart. I'm sure he's done all of that as well. But there's definitely almost like a pop rock contemporary feel, perhaps less so with the Armed Man, but certainly the Adiemus, which he first became famous for doing that was very rock inspired and pop inspired. So it's interesting seeing the sort of crossover with that, really.
And then the other piece, I don't know this one, Philip Stopford's Misidaeus Nabiscum.
So Philip Stopford is a young composer. I say young, he's not 50 yet.
That's young.
So he's a young composer. He has written a lot of choral works. He's himself an organist, a choral singer. He's worked as a chorister when he was young. I think perhaps he was a chorister at Westminster Abbey. I could be wrong in that. But he's definitely come up through that choral tradition. And he's written lots of smaller choral works for SATB choir, soprano, alto, tenor, bass choir, that are maybe sort of 5-6 minutes long. And I've come across and sang a few of those over the years and really enjoyed singing them. And then I came across this longer work. He composed it in 2021. It was first performed in 2021, Misidaeus Nabiscum, which is the mass of God is with us. And I listened to it, really loved it, thought, well, I think this will go well with The Armed Man. It's not specifically about peace, but I think it can tie into a theme of peace. So it's a really work with some good tunes, very accessible. I think the choir are going to enjoy singing something new, as well as The Armed Man, which some of them have done a couple of times before. And for the audience coming to the villa as well, it'll be something new that they will hopefully enjoy listening to.
And is that something when you're coming up with a programme, is it something, do you normally try to look for two pieces maybe that will complement each other and perhaps have a similar theme or background? Or is it a case of, do you sometimes do, right, one might be one style and the second totally different?
I quite like to have a theme. I think since I've been, this will be my fifth year, so we've not always done two works. Sometimes we've just done one, but I like to have a theme. So last year we did French music and we did a variety of stuff. We did some choral stuff in that. We did some opera in that as well. So within the theme, we sort of mixed it up a little bit. This year, the theme of, well, it seemed like it was time to do The Armed Man. So the theme of peace seemed like it was the right one to go with. And there were a number of pieces we could have chosen. But I think I'm always thinking, well, what would the choir like to sing? They're the ones giving up 6-7 months of their life to do this. And although we are putting on a performance that we really want people to come and see and we really want people to enjoy it, It's a community choir in effect, and it's got to be something that people are going to want to be part of and they're going to want to sing. So that's always in my mind. I was looking through lots of pieces and there's some great music by living composers, which I think is sort of split into 10 parts and it would be very impressive. But do our choir members want to spend all their time trying to sing in 10 parts? I don't know. There's something that, like the Misidaeus Nabiscum that Philip Stopford has done, and that's in 4, 5, very occasionally 6 parts. And I think it's going to be just as rewarding, but people won't be getting frustrated or won't be feeling that it's beyond what we as a choir can do. That's also part of the consideration.
And is that a tricky balancing act for you? As you say, you've got to have something that the choir are going to enjoy singing, otherwise presumably people might not turn up. Equally, I think, you know, the more experienced singers, I'm sure quite a lot of them want something that maybe, you know, challenge them a bit, something that's not going to be, you know, they're going to get bored with, something they're going to be enjoying, maybe challenging their singing and reading and all the rest of it. And at the same time, you've got to be something at the end of the day, it's going to be performed. And you do want something that people aren't going to say, you want people to come and see it. So it's got to have a degree of appeal.
It has. And it's tricky to get it right. A few years ago, I had picked a piece by Elgar called The Music Makers and a piece by Finzi called The Fourth Saint Cecilia. And the idea was it was themed around music that year. And not so many of the choir had done those pieces before. I don't think anyone had done the Finzi. A few people had done Music Makers. And it was a bit of a struggle. We got there, but I wasn't feeling that people were enjoying rehearsals so much. And that's when I really started to think, OK, well, I might have all these ideas. Like, wouldn't it be great if we did that? Wouldn't it be great if we did that? But there's no point, like you say, if the choir aren't enjoying doing it, then it's going to stop people wanting to come. And the whole point, I think, of a big choir like this is getting together to sing, together to make music. So hopefully this year we've got two works that people will really enjoy singing. And it's not too late. If anyone wants to come and join us, we're starting rehearsals on the 11th of September at 7:30 at St Andrew's Church on Glencrutchery Road this year. Our first rehearsal is an open rehearsal. So anyone who might wonder if it's for them, they can come along, they can give it a try, they can see if they like it, but they're not committing themselves to anything before the event. So we are having an open rehearsal on Thursday, the 11th of September.
So anyone can come. I was going to ask that, because presumably, again, it's always any of these organisations and choirs, it's always important to get new blood coming through all the time, isn't it? And having people coming in and getting new voices in. And I suppose, is there a limit, or is it the more the merrier as far as you're concerned?
I think as far as we're concerned, the more the merrier, really. I think we're about 100 at the moment of people who've signed up, but we can always have more than that. There's plenty of space in our rehearsal room for more. And I think because we sing with the symphony orchestra and we're in the villa, the bigger the choir is, the better, the more impact that's going to have. And I think for the people singing, the more people singing, being part of that huge choral sound, I think this is where the Choral Society is a little bit different from other groups, just in the scale of the numbers of people singing. It just gives it that different experience. So everyone is welcome to come. We don't audition. You don't have to be able to read music. Obviously, if you do, makes it a little bit easier. But there's so many great online resources now to help with learning of parts that I think it's easily got over if you can't read music. And we sort of give all the support we need to people who can't to encourage them along.
If you go along, enjoy the first one and think, oh, you know what, I wouldn't mind giving this a crack. What sort of level of sort of commitment were you looking at going between September and the performance next March?
Obviously, I'd like people to be practicing at home every single day.
Quite right too. I'm sure they all do.
But we rehearse on the second and fourth Thursday of each month. The very occasional fifth Thursday when that happens. Usually there's one or two throughout a year, but the second and fourth Thursday of each month. And then as we get a bit closer to the concert, we do have some weekend rehearsals where we're maybe meeting with the orchestra, or we're just thinking we need more than that just once a fortnight. We've just got to get together a little bit. But it never becomes, it's not sort of every day for 3 weeks in the run-up to the concert. It's fairly spaced out, and we do rely, as I say, on people to put the work in away from rehearsals, and then we guide through in rehearsals.
If you fancy singing some beautiful music in the company of like-minded souls over the winter, get yourselves along there. Friendly Bunch, Mandy's musical direction, second to none. Staying with the musical theme, albeit more strings than voice, a new book's just been released aimed at experienced and improving players of the fiddle. It's been released by Culture Van, and I dropped down to the headquarters in St John's to hear more from Manx Music Development Officer for CV, Dr Chloe Woolley.
Just during Incruniac's Celtic Gathering, we launched a brand new book of fiddle music for students, advanced fiddle students. And we had Dr. Laura Rowles leading this project. She's edited the whole book, and it's got arrangements by herself and David Kirkallen and Katie Lawrence, also very well known fiddle players. So the aim of this book was to carry on where the previous book resource that we've provided for schools called Fiddle. And it's Manx, that was Manx music for grades 1 to 3. Mm-hmm. So it's been used by the peripatetic violin teaching team for the music service. And we saw that there was a need for more challenging pieces of music based on traditional Manx music, and also compositions by Katie and composers such as Peather Cubbley and David Cogallan.
So all the new, there's traditional pieces and newly written pieces.
That's right. So it's a mix, really. We've got old dance tunes such as Shula Neenan and the Flitter Dance, but with more exciting arrangements than just playing the tune. They've been arranged by Laura, Dave and Katie to make them sort of explore Manx traditional techniques like ornamentation and but also fit in with grade 4 and 5 with the examinations that children can take. And adults, of course.
Naturally, yeah. And what sort of interest, because I think whenever I'm sort of going around, there seems to be a massive resurgence in young people playing harp. Is there a great interest in picking the fiddle up as well?
I think there is, yes. There's a good number learning through the music service, and they've been very supportive, the team there up in Douglas. So a lot of children are learning Manx tunes through their general lessons, and up till now, through the fiddle book, they've been able to use a Manx tune as part of their exam. Now we've got Fiddle Reached, which means fiddle again. Grades 4 and 5 students can choose to use one of the tunes from this book, also for their ABRSM performance exams, which is the Associated Board, very well known examination. So there's a selection of 16 pieces in this book, Fiddle Reached, 8 for grade 4 and 8 for grade 5, and some of them are accompanied with very interesting piano accompaniments, some are unaccompanied, and we've got some duets in there as well. So they'll be very useful for as performance pieces. They all sound very impressive when performed, and they're fitting in with that level of playing that would be expected at grade 4 and 5.
So it is something, as you say, it's not the sort of book you go to straight off if you're picking up the fiddle for the first time. It's for improving and sort of perhaps more advanced students.
Yes, that's right. And there's a good variety of pieces as well. So during the launch, Laura got some of her fiddle students, of which there are many now, to perform some of the pieces as solos and duets. And a lot of the pieces can be played all together as well as ensemble pieces. And we are finding that there's a growing interest in violin, fiddle. There's quite a few teachers now, and of course a few years ago Katie Lawrence had the Manx Fiddle Orchestra, which brought together violinists from some of her younger students with members of the symphony orchestra, and there was a mixed ability, intergenerational, and it was a lovely community opportunity mm-hmm. there to get together.
And is it sort of a different technique playing fiddle and playing in the folk idiom compared to, say, as you say, students who might be going to the orchestra and playing classical repertoire?
There is, really, yes. Yeah, and similar to other traditional music styles found in Scotland and Ireland and England, there's certain techniques that are applied to Manx tunes. So we've got ornamentation like cuts and rolls that you wouldn't necessarily find in classical music, but obviously classical players could apply that to their playing. So there's hints and tips throughout Fiddle Reached on how to do that. There's exercises on how to perfect your roll. And these are all in the Manx tunes are in modes that are more associated with folk music. Mm-hmm. So classical players can have a go at it. And the bowings as well, they're all in there, so you could use this as a self-taught book, or there's a teacher's book as well, which has got all the piano accompaniments.
Yeah, I was thinking that, so if someone wasn't actually taking lessons but did play a little bit, they could use it on their own at home.
They definitely could, yes. Laura's put on every single piece, there's hints and tips and little exercises that you can try out that explain the interpretation of these pieces. And going forwards, hopefully we can get some of these recorded by Laura, Dave and Katie. Some of them are online already through manxmusic.com. You can find videos, and through Culture Vannon's various resources.
Great. And of course, the thing is it available in all good bookshops, or where can people get a copy?
Yes, you can get it in the Manor Music Shop in Peel. There's a student book at £12, a teacher's book at £15, which has got all the piano accompaniments. And you can also get it in the Bridge Bookshop, and I'm sure it'll be in other local bookshops soon.
And just finally, is this something that comes in sort of your remit, working within Manx Music, to sort of, again, help to provide resources like this for people to be able to play, whether it's singing, whether it's harp, or whether it's fiddle in this case? Is this something that really is building up a repertoire so people and young people coming through in the next generations have material they can work with?
Very much so, yes. So over the past couple of decades,
never that long,
at Culture Van, and I've worked with the music service and with private music teachers to produce these resources. So over the years, we've got a resource for the flute, which is all Manx tunes, whistle, brass instruments. So I worked with the music team to produce prash, and it's ongoing. We're always looking at new opportunities to produce accessible resources, and a lot of these feed into the Manx Folk Awards. So children can take part in a particular class and choose two tunes from their resource for a competition, very friendly competition. So that's just before Easter every year, open to all school children.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
Now, of course, this programme is brought to you by our friends down at the Arts Council. Always busy supporting artistic ventures on the Isle of Man. We'll hear more about the latest round of funding next week. But, of course, they bring you events of their own. One such, the annual Arts Council Lecture. Been a great success in recent years, seen household names such as Joanna Lumley and Louis Theroux grace the stage. This year's event is fast coming up on the rails and is following in the same vein. So Arts Development Manager Martin Kane tells me.
Yeah, this year is kind of no different, really. We've sort of hit the ground running again with Paloma Faith. So, it's been quite brilliant. Our agent, that I deal with for a couple of the ones before, sort of had moved to a new agency, and she gave me a call and said, do you want to have a chat? And so we sort of said, okay, well, we had an actor last year in Joanna Lumley. We've had Louis Theroux over. We had Kevin McLeod after him. And we kind of like to want to try and diversify the guests up a bit. And I just sort of said, you haven't got anyone in music, have you, by any chance? To which she said, we've got Paloma Faith. I went, perfect, you know? That was kind of one of those sort of instant reactions, because of the music side. But actually, when you start looking into Paloma, her career, you know, she's a best-selling author, she's an actress, she's now a podcast host, because, you know, podcasts are the new big thing now. And it's been great. She's had some amazing guests on there. So, we're really looking forward to seeing her and having her talk about her life. So if anyone's been to the lecture before, you'll know about the format is a bit of a in conversation. Mm-hmm. And then in the second half, we have the audience ask questions. And either they can stand up and ask the question themselves, or we can ask them on their behalf. But I think Paloma's going to be an absolute one of those classic guests that it's you'll be wondering the next day why you never got a ticket for.
And how are tickets going? Are still tickets available? Or?
Yeah. There's some left. Yeah. I mean, they'll be starting to go quick. But yeah, we've sold a good chunk already. That's in a month's time, so that's the 15th of September.
And details of that on the website.
Yeah, absolutely. You can also go to the Villa Gaiety's website to book tickets for it as well.
Sounds like a great night out, does it not? And if seeing Paloma wasn't enough enticement to go alone, I should tell you she's in conversation with none other than our own Christy DeHaven. Before we go, we heard about the goings-on at KA this summer, Kensington Arts, a little earlier in the year on Spotlight. And whilst I was down at KA, I enjoyed a chat with the project leader for dance there, James Doyle. And I asked James to tell me a little bit more about teaching dance and trying to get kids to become involved in movement.
It's been going great. We've been doing lots of dance projects and theatre projects. So it's been going really well. We've had a great response, lots of fantastic kids that have been attending. And it's really nice to see them grow and mature and develop their practice.
What sort of clientele do you get coming along to the classes?
We get all abilities and ages, from people who've never danced before, kids who've never moved or done any kind of movement before, right through to people who are a bit more experienced that are attending local dance schools, so are currently doing syllabus work or developing their own dance practice. So we get a full range, which is really, really nice.
Is it difficult encouraging kids to come in who might have never done any dance or movement work before?
Yes, it's really difficult. I think sometimes you're fighting against people's preconception of what that style is or what dance is, or you're fighting against their own preconception of, oh, I'm really uncoordinated, or I'm not the right size, or I've never done anything before. And you're fighting those because what actually the reality of it is very different to what people think. You know, it doesn't matter if you think you can't or not coordinated. We can teach you those things. You know, we can give you tools and techniques of how to do that. And also you learn those things as you go through the styles and the techniques. So you're fighting against people's own perceptions, and quite often they're wrong.
Is it more difficult? Because I, again, have come from a dram background, and you look down at projects here or maybe sort of youth theatre and such like, you see a lot of kids are interested in doing theatre and acting. Do you think it's actually harder? Cause, again, speaking from my own point of view, I always think I find it far harder to express myself physically than I would do maybe to play a character and use my voice.
I think if you've never done it before, it can feel intimidating and it can feel that way. I think if you work with the right people and go through a step-by-step process and start to learn how to do it and are shown how to do it, then I think that really breaks those barriers down. I think people eventually do get there, but it's difficult. I think people like to stay in their boxes, stay in their lanes and don't like to sort of try other new things quite a lot of the time. But actually, you know, if you give it a go, people are very surprised, really, really surprised. So sometimes it's a bit of a fight, but when you get them in there, you get them loving it and enjoying it, then as soon people become very addicted to it, and before you know it, you're taking lots of classes and you're on stage all the time. So,
have you always come from a movement background, or did you come from sort of drama and other arts as well?
I originally came through a theatre background. I actually wanted to go and be an actor, but no one told me that I was terrible. So, so I then through my theatre course, I actually found dance. And that's when I then found my passion, and I got accepted into the Northern School of Contemporary Dance. So I went and I never looked back.
That's about it for now. We'll be back next week, of course. See you then. In the meantime, be good, whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Hey, Moo.